This is a Pinball News production.
Hello, everyone. I never thought I'd be following the Three Stooges on a speaking engagement. So hopefully I can elevate the activity a little bit. I'm going to try to go through 25 years of my pinball and game career in 25 minutes, okay? So I'm going to go through some things pretty quickly. But what I do, I want to share some things with you that when I was doing this wonderful career that is pinball, I just want to share some little stories that go along with some of the stuff, and I may dwell on them a little bit, but basically what you're going to see is some samples of my work and how I did some of the work, and what I even up to today. So this picture, starting picture, is me at 1975, back with I'm the one with the hands on the shoulders of the wrestler. This was at the state tournament, and I was a wrestling coach, as Rob said, and a high school art teacher at this time. Why do I have this in there? Well, there's going to be a little bit of a thread of wrestling throughout this, and I am talking about not WWE. I'm talking about the kind they do in the Olympics and the kind they do in college and high school, which is real wrestling. There's going to be some. The last thing I'm going to talk about is going to involve wrestling too. So that's what should, in summary, kind of wrap things up. So we start with a wrestling thing. That's why. This first picture is my what I was doing at the time. Besides teaching and coaching, I was a fine artist, and I don't mean that as an adjective. I mean that's fine art versus commercial art. And I was. This is a painting I did of my children, my son and daughter, who appear in some of my work later on as they've grown up. And this is some more pictures of my the type of work I was doing at the time. Now, I was at the point in my career, I've taught for 7 years, and I was at the time where I was about to go into fine art as a career. I was only 28 years old. That's kind of a big move to try to, you know, support yourself, a wife and family and a house and all that goes with it, as a freelance fine artist. But I was going very well. I had sold 300 paintings the following 2 years, and it was really a pretty serious concern. I got a call from Billy O'Donnell at this time, and this is one is brand new to the slideshow that I talk about sometimes. This is what I presented. This is embarrassing, but this is what I presented as my portfolio to go to Bally. So, you know, I'm not ashamed of the landscape is a fine painting, I think. The other pieces were ones I did in eighth grade, and that's all I had. Because I had sold all my paintings, this thing came up about come in. And Billy O'Donnell had said that they want to start an art department at Bally in-house, because the advertising poster was doing all the artwork. And would I be interested in that? And I love coaching and teaching so much that I ended up going back into it. But so I wasn't really that excited about it. And quite honestly, I knew nothing about pinball because it was illegal in Chicago. So I mean, I didn't grow up playing pinball like many of the collectors that I've talked to. So anyway, this was my portfolio, and I showed Ross Shear and Billy O'Donnell were the two that looked at it initially, and was kind of interesting. I knew this might be kind of an interesting job if I took it. After they looked at my artwork and said they were impressed, that was nice. But I think they saw that I had some talent, so that was good. But then they took me in the game room to show me some of the games they had done. And just as a side thing, give you an idea what, you know, maybe I didn't realize it at the time, but what the future might hold about how cool this job could be. There's this kind of scruffy guy in the game room that was playing pinball. And we go in, and Ross Shear introduced me and says, "Well, Paul, this is Bruce." And I said, "How do you do?" I looked at the artwork on the games. We go back into the office. He said, "That is Bruce Springsteen." And this is very early in his career, too, but he was just a pinball nut, and he was in over there to ask if he could stop by the factory and play pinball. So anyway, so now you can see this is into the commercial work of growing the work at Bally. My wife is the one who really convinced me that this would be a good move, to be quite honest. She's an accountant, and she also recognized, because this was on the upswing. Bally was on the upswing at this point. They had a young artist, and I want to make a young artist. He was certainly younger at the time, older than me, but his name was Dave Christensen. And I think we all know Dave and Dave's artwork. He is really what made me think this was a good idea. Not him personally, because he wanted no part of it, to be honest, but his style, his realistic style. Nobody was doing artwork like that. And I said, if they want this kind of work here, and it gives me a chance to do much more of a more fine art approach to pinball art, then I'm all in. And so that's kind of what really tipped the scale for me. And then, of course, my wife saying this might be a once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunity. So go ahead. So this just is, if you saw me at the autograph thing, this is what I hand out. This is just a quick sample of some of my games that I've done and some that are that I have enjoyed doing. But and they run all the way from Bally all the way up to Data East, Sega. What's the last one? Oh, I'm missing one. Stern. Anyway, several different companies, same place, so same gentleman in charge. and this now I don't usually show this game because I don't consider it one of my finest pieces of artwork, but it was only my second game of doing a piece of pinball art. It was Evel Knievel, and the thing that is important about it was that I had to learn how to do all this kind of art. This is not like an oil painting or an acrylic painting. So I had to learn how to do this, and quite honestly, even it was a little bit reluctantly, Dave Christensen worked with me and showed me how the screen prints, you know, how screens are cut and how ink work is done and so on. So I got to give him credit. It wasn't easy for him because I was this new guy. He had no idea what I was there for except to do more artwork. They wanted to keep their artwork in-house and create a look that was Bally's. So if we go to the next slide. Up at the top there, this is something that, I don't know if you can see it but very clearly, but that's where Evel Knievel came in to approve the glass and sign the glass. And he says, "Happy landings, Evel Knievel." And this, if you look at the way the motorcycle is jumping over the buses, I don't know if you can see the one on the far right, but it's in a complete arc. And he said, now he was in Chicago to jump over a whole tank of sharks, and they had been at the amphitheater, and they've been pumping this thing up for weeks on TV, and he's going to have Telly Savalas and Jill St. John as the commentators on live TV, and it's just, and so the day he came in and saw me was before he was supposed to jump, and he said, "No, you have to correct the way that the last two cycles are. If I jump the way I am there, I'll crash. So you have to have my front tire raised up at the last two segments, so that animation sequence would be accurate." So of course they were real happy at Bally because they had to screen a new glass and cut new screens. But we did it. The ironic thing is, I don't say this in a mean way, but I don't know if anybody remembers this day, but he took one more practice jump over the sharks the next day, and he crashed. He was in the hospital for a while, and the funniest thing about it to me, well, first of all, he shouldn't have made me change the art, but Jill St. John and Telly Savalas, for anybody, I don't know if anybody even knows who I'm talking about anymore, but they used to be Kojak and, they were on for an hour to fill dead air about how brave Evel Knievel was in doing this jump while he's recuperating in the hospital. Okay. This is a game, for a long time, it was the best-selling pinball ever made. 20,000 games, 8-ball. I was reluctant to even do it because I was working on some artwork for another game that was called Lost World. And I was also very, very adamant about trying to get this new process in that would allow us as artists to be much more like a painter or a drawer. You know, it was a different way of producing the artwork. You know, it's called a four-color process, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but it was new to pinball, and the first game that was going to be printed in it was Lost World. So I hurried up to get done with the 8-ball piece, which is done the conventional way, and then this thing took off like crazy. It was the first full electronic pinball, I think, that we made, where the whole run was in its 20,000. Okay. And then this is my little sample piece of Lost World that I showed management to get them to try this four-color process. And this doesn't do it justice, really, although this is just a sample pieces of the different colors on each layer. And then now the next one is the actual game for Lost World. I'm going to move up fairly quickly here, Dave, on some of these. That's Lost World. So that's the first four-color pinball manufactured with that name on it. So this is my next game. Now, Playboy, I'm going to talk a little bit about. Playboy, first of all, I was asked to do the rendering for the game. We sent it to Hefner, and we had a conference call with him, and it was a tough day for me because I did this great rendering of a montage of all the Playboy life experiences and what it would be like to be a Playboy guy and, you know, all the things you think would be great. Hefner saw it and said, "Nah, no way." And he referred to Captain Fantastic, not for the artwork, which he liked as well, but he liked the idea of being the main guy right in the middle. And that's what Hefner wanted. And so that's what we did. We had to go out there. Unfortunately, we had to go to the Playboy Mansion four times. Three times with Tom Neiman and one time by myself, which is quite an adventure. And anyway, but it was, but I mean, here's how this, I mean, it was really quite a beautiful place. It's gorgeous. The actors are all living there. By the way, when Hefner took us on a tour the first time we were down there, he's taking us into the game house, which is where this game now sits. And they had like a little zoo and the grotto, of course. And then we go down to the tennis courts, and two large African-American gentlemen are playing tennis. And he goes, "Hi, Jim. Hi, Bill." And he brings us over there, and it's Jim Brown, who was my football idol in high school and college, and then Bill Cosby. And so if you know anything about what's going on now, this is right during the same time all that stuff was going on, supposedly starting. So that's a little bit of a historical update. Okay. This is the actual game art in the game house. He doesn't have a game room, he has a game house. And the thing that was, this is one of the things we talk about, the side stories. You know, I was a teacher for 6 years, as I said, or 7 years, and I would come back and see some of my fellow teachers from time to time. And they say, "Hey, what's new? What have you been up to?" "Well, let's see. I went out to the Playboy Mansion last week, and we were playing pinball with." And they look at me, "Get out of here! Shut up!" You know, that's not true. And you know, so I started thinking, I don't know. This is kind of a different situation. This was not in the job description about going. Yeah. So it was very exciting for a lot of reasons. And I'll talk about some other stuff later. I'm a movie addict, a movie fan, and a lot of artists are. And so this job allowed us to have a lot of interaction with that part of life, the movie-making business and so on. Okay, this is my next game, which was our first wide body. Again, not going to say a lot about it, except it is my wife and I at the time. And this is when I started using some of my friends and models. I have a game called Knight Rider that I did. And the fellow that's a truck driver on that game, he was my assistant wrestling coach. And so I'm not too proud to ask anybody to model for me at times. And my wife is a great sport to do this one. She insists it's only her from the neck up. But anyway, she still looks pretty good. I have people that come over and want to fix my games just so they can meet the woman on Paragon. She stays away during that stuff. This one, anyway, one of my favorite games. There she is. And that was 2002, I think. So gives you an idea. That was with us with the painting. Okay, this one I put in just recently because this is not my game, and it's Kevin O'Connor's game, and Gary just has brought out a new version of the KISS game. But this was how we did our presentation of the artwork of Kevin's game back in those days. And you know, Bill Alkine was Alcoin rather was the fellow our liaison with KISS, and it's Tom Neiman sitting on the back, who was, by the way, the first one to ever come up with licensed games. He's the guy that did it with Wizard. And then a bunch of others to follow. And that's me with the beard there and the jacket doing our presentation. A little bit of an uncomfortable situation when you're doing an interview with guys who are looking for approval and they're all in this full crazy makeup. You know, this was kind of new at the time. And, of course, Gene Simmons, he couldn't approve it right away because we made him look, or he thought Kevin made him look a little bit too not manly enough, not buff enough. So Kevin buffed him up a bit. But it's a great piece of art, and so is a new one. So, okay, this is Xenon, which is a... we did a show here a couple years ago with Suzanne Ciani talking about it. She's a wonderful person, very talented. She's the one that was the voice of Xenon. And she was amazing with sounds. And so this was a really... Greg Kamik was a designer. Right, Greg? Yeah. Yep. And he also did Evel Knievel, if I remember. Did you do Knievel? No, that was Gary Gayton, right? Yeah. Okay, this was Greg's, and it was a great game. I love this game. It was very different looking. Before we had ramps and everything else, he put the tube on this game. It's the first game that had some really interesting three-dimensional shot. So, but that was our, and that's when we got to come up with a theme, rather than coming from a license. Okay, another one. This is a game called Centaur. Is Roger Sharp in the audience? I don't know. Roger, yes, sir. I'm going to pay a tribute to Roger here, and we just decided this a couple, maybe half a year ago. We were asked at our Centaur presentation here, well, who came up with the idea for a black and white pinball machine? And of course, Jim Patlis said he did, and I said I did. And Roger Sharp reminded me. Now, Roger, in all the different hats he's worn, he also was the one that used to critique these games and the artwork on the games and did a really eloquent job. Of course, I liked it because he always said nice things about mine. But he's the one that, in a cab ride, and I remember it, We're talking about, you know, we have all these colorful games going on out there. There are all these multicolored games. And so I wonder if somebody did a black and white pinball. I think that would be a cool idea. And I, you know, locked that away for, I guess, about maybe almost a year later. And that's where I think the seed was planted. So thank you, Miguel. Roger Sharp. So, and this is, you know, it was black and white with just a touch of red accents. You know, I've been asked what it represents. I have no idea. At the time, it was. I kind of was figuring it's a lot of Harley type, you know, wear with a. I actually tried to talk Kevin O'Connor into doing this a year before when he was doing Silver Ball Mania, and I told him my idea, and he said, "I just don't get it," and so we passed on it, and then so I picked it up to. And it was just something I had in my head, probably from a nightmare, but anyway, it turned out to be. It's one of my favorite games. It's probably my all-time favorite playing game. I just think it's a phenomenal game, and I like. A lot of the games I've done, but this one, the play of it was excellent. So, okay, this one, Andromeda Game Plan, we just knew from a little bit earlier. This is after I had actually left Bally at this time. It was the start of my own business as a freelancer, and so I was doing video games. I was doing pinball art. This is kind of when, you know, the pinball started to go to the other direction a little bit. And, it, you know, we all know that kind of pinballs go through these pendulum swings, and it's nice to be where it's on the upswing now, which is great. But this was my daughter, and that's why I said she was a ballet dancer, beautiful figure, beautiful face. She was a perfect model, and she happened to live in my house, which was nice. And so she ended up being my model for a lot of things. And it was Ed Cibula who did the playfield design for this before he went to Stern. Grand Lizard. This is a game I like. It's my son is a wrestler, and he was my model here. And this one, they only made a very limited number of glasses. And I think the play field stayed the same, but Python Angelo came in and did the plastics and then redid the back glass. And as I understand, it was because the displays were changing to a larger display opening, and they did pay me to do it. So that's that's very important, as we know. But it was a fun job. They asked me to do it in a month, the whole package, you know, and we did it. And it was that's a pretty short turnaround, and we didn't have Photoshop in those days, so that it makes it even tougher. So that's an oil painting that was done at that time. And there's only if you have a game or a Grand Lizard glass, you've got a pretty rare glass. Okay. This is Phantom of the Opera. I'm not going to talk too much about it, except it's one of my all-time favorite games to do the artwork on. And I got to give, it drove Joe crazy, but Gary and Joe gave me time to do it. And this is my, again, they told me to read the book, and then instead of doing, because the book is in public domain, so it could be my interpretation of Phantom. Now, you never see the game looking like that on the street, because it has the mask on it that is then illuminated by the backlighting that kind of makes that ugly face stand out. But this is the way the painting actually looked, and it's the way it still hangs in my studio today. And that's my daughter as the ballet dancer, as the Christine Daae character, and my son actually modeled for the Phantom. He's looking better these days, though. So, okay, there we go. There it is with the glass. And again, all right. Now this is an there might be a little bit of surprise in the audience if they haven't seen this before. That's my photographs of my daughter, my son. There's my son in the bathrobe, who was supposed to be at the masquerade ball. And this is kind of how illustrators would work. We would, you know, we'd get willing volunteers, or we'd have to pay a model, or however we want to get our subject matter, because it had to be pretty original. And then nowadays, with Google, it's even worse, because everything's copyrighted. So go ahead. Okay, now you might recognize the guy in the bottom there. He ended up being Gary was my model for the owner, one of the owners of the Opera House, and Ed Cibula in the upper right-hand corner was the other owner of the Opera House. So they're on the playfield, their likenesses. And again, there's some more of my children being nice, and my daughter's boyfriend at the time who were in the back class. Okay, this is, the reason I have this one on here, because I love this cabinet too. It's one of the ones I really enjoy doing. It was kind of done in the old way, where they're done with a much more efficient process now, but this was still back with the old screen stencils. And the fellow that's the little boy in the picture there is my godson, and he is now 26, to give you an idea, back in the day. But I'm going to mention this now because it occurs to me to mention it. When Gary and I think Gary was on this trip, but I know Joe Kamenkow and I were out there when we talked to Matt Groening, who is, everybody know who Matt Groening is? The guy who created The Simpsons. We were going into his office at 20th Century Fox. Now, he had just signed, I think the year before, a multi-million dollar deal for The Simpsons, and we all know how well they have done as an animated series. But I was going in to meet with him. We were going to talk to him a little bit about The Simpsons, even though I wasn't going to do the artwork. We were out there for a couple other meetings with other licensors. The thing that struck me is I walked into his office, and there is this is what I walked into, a Phantom of the Opera in Matt Groening's office. And when he was being introduced, I say this very humbly, he came up to me and says, "You're Paul Ferris? Oh, man, I'm going to want to shake your hand. You're a genius." Now, to have somebody like that who had just signed this huge deal, but this is one thing I want to point out, and I know it's happened with Greg Ferris and Kevin O'Connor and a bunch of us who have met some of these talented people. They're wonderful. The talent people are wonderful to work with. They have no attitude at all. They respect other artists, you know. And that's kind of how Matt was. He talked about how he used to dig in his sofa to find quarters to go buy a fat burger, you know. And 2 years, you know, 2 years later, he's got on top of the world at 20th Century. So anyway, so he had my Phantom of the Opera, loved the game. I say my Phantom of the Opera, but obviously the whole collective. Okay. Back to the Future, very quick on this. This was a lot of fun because we got to go to the party, and these are things you don't think about. As I said, it's not in the job description. The game itself, the only thing that's sort of unique about the game is this is where Joe Kamenko became very good friends with Bob Gale, who was the producer of the and wrote the script. But Michael J. Fox wouldn't let us use his image in the license because I think he just wanted more money. But they said it was because he didn't want to be Marty McFly the rest of his life. That was what he was worried about being, so, you know, that was the only image there would be of him. Anyway, so I had to quickly redo the artwork with, again, my son stepped in, so that's my son in the Marty McFly character, and luckily with a sunglass and everything, it's very hard to tell it's not him. So that's some of the adjustments you have to make. This is why one I like doing a lot, Batman, the first Batman. Joe Kamenko was telling me today that Kim Basinger really loved the game. Which was nice to hear, you know, 20 years later. Jack Nicholson was very happy. And these things, when you're doing painted images of a backlash and their licenses, they're challenging because Dolly Parton wanted her fingers longer. Helen Hunt, who I'll talk about in a minute, she wanted her eyes more wide apart, you know, so now they have some options. When you got to use a photograph of them, that's all there is. You know, we use photographs for that. So it can be sometimes very challenging. And it's usually not the actor themselves, it's usually their management people that try to want to craft their image a little bit. Okay, Hook, another one. And there's some famous people in the room here that are on this. That's Gary Stern as Captain Hook, Joe Kamenko as Peter Pan, and Shelley Klass as Tinkerbell. And this was... Because none of them, Gary could probably fill you in better than I don't know what happened with the license that we had. We got to go on the set of Hook. This was the most amazing set you'd ever seen. We went to the big Hook party afterwards where they had three circus tents with all the ship parts in it and, you know, all these actors and actresses that are there for the premiere party. But I just think they would not release their images, so we did it. We got the rights to the image. Of doing are the rights to the property, but we had to use other images. But I think it worked out pretty well, in spite of that. Okay. Another little insert of wrestling. Whereas I'm putting this in here because all during this time that I've been doing this artwork and working at Bally, with the exception of I think 4 years, I was coaching wrestling at some sport, either at college. This was in the college level, and this comes back later. So that's kind of reinforcing something. This was kind of a good way to work off some. Pressure and worry about deadlines and stuff to go and just get a couple of two-hour workout with some college guys and have them let them beat up on me. Okay, again, very quickly on this one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's the only glass that I've ever have rejected because I made the woman's chest too small. So, and you remember this, I don't know, Gary, if you remember, but Eastman and Laird, these comic book guys out of Massachusetts who had the license, I had to send in two different drawings each time with a more voluptuous female. She was not like that in the movie, but that's how they wanted it, so we did it. This is one of my favorite pieces to do. The movie itself was not so so terrific, maybe, but I love the stuff to work with. John Borg was a designer on it. We went out there and we got great photos to work from. They recreated all the, in England, in London, they did all the sets, like very authentic to the original story of Frankenstein. So to me, and I'm a monster person that loves to do monsters, I thought this was a wonderful story. That's Robert De Niro and Kenneth Branagh is the Dr. Frankenstein character. And this was one of my, as I said, one of my favorite paintings, and it's in my studio, hanging in my studio now. Another one, that this was kind of a cool, we're at the Frankenstein premiere, and all of a sudden I'm blanking on, Pierce Brosnan was the is the new James Bond character. Now, we hadn't even done James Bond at this point. We were at the Frankenstein premiere with Prince Charles, by the way. I don't know if you remember that. They had us all stand up in the audience, turn the lights on, and Prince Charles walks down the aisle to sit in and watch the movie, which was kind of an unusual. It doesn't happen to every movie that I go to. But that was at the premiere. But Pierce Brosnan was there, and all the women were gushing about how handsome he was, and so was Tom Cruise, and so were a bunch of other, you know, matinee idols. But this guy was the one they all said is really, and he was the nicest guy in the world, very much more rugged in person. And we started playing pinball together, and he said, you know, I used to do this. I said, you used to do pinballs? He said, no, but I used to be a commercial artist. I said, you're no way. He said, yeah. And he said, but I couldn't make a living at it. So I said, I think your new gig is working out pretty good for you. So, and then Joe tells him that I was going to be doing him his image on the next pinball. So he was very excited and very cool, very nice guy. This is it with the logo inserted. That's the only difference. I'm going to buy this real quick. Game never got made. A lot of work. Total Recall is the name of the game. Arnold Schwarzenegger. And but it was a concept that was probably came at a time when it would be tough to put justify the floor space that it would. It was two pinballs that merged into one backlash. And it was a cool idea. Tim Steckel, I think, was the one who designed it. Okay, next one. This is just it with the logo. I'm moving pretty quick here. Okay, Batman, this one didn't get made either. Now, this is the second Batman movie. And again, I'm not even sure. But again, what I like to point out, especially to any artists that are out there, I got paid. I mean, they had me do it, but it wasn't right because the deal fell through that I suffered. And it was, this is the one with Danny DeVito and Michelle Pfeiffer. Okay, Twister, this is my last pinball, commercial pinball that I did. And this is the one I'm talking about with Helen Hunt. She wanted, now her eyes are much wider open there than they are in the photos they sent. And what I've noticed after having to make those changes, and I've talked to other people about this, that I see her in current movies and things, she's had eye surgery. She's had plastic surgery to open her eyes up. So, you know, it must have bothered her that she had those squinty eyes. Well, now she doesn't. She has kind of the former Bruce Jenner's eyes now. Okay. I couldn't remember her name. Okay, I'm real quick on this. This is just some of the stuff I did after this, and I'm not going to spend any time on it. But I did a lot of video game package design, and when pinball slowed down a bit. Okay, so these are just a couple of the ones. This one called Panic Restaurant, which, by the way, I guess is it's a hot item for a collector because he bought the original painting at a pretty nice price. Okay, this is some of the advertising art I got to do. So just gives you that one. Next one. Another one, this kind of that, I love the sword and sorcery theme. That's why I'm really fond of the Game of Thrones piece that Gary's got going now. This is another one of the Ferrari racing a truck, Fair Race, right? Next one, this is a volleyball game. So this stuff was kind of fun to do. Okay, next one. And these are this is actually the side of a video cabinet. The only one, I was talking to somebody earlier about it today, and he remembered, he said, Zombie Raid, the name of the game. Where is she? Yep. It's one of my favorites, because I got to do kind of realistic Frankenstein creatures, and it's a life-size cabinet size, so it's full size. Next one. And this is the werewolf that's on the other side. A lot of fun to do these. These were some of my favorite pieces to do. This is the last pinball game I did, which was done for a home market by Roger Duba at his company and Churchill. And this was actually, there's a bad omen here because my daughter is no longer married to the driver of the car. So I don't know if that crashing car was any indication, but my grandkids are in the car, my wife's in the car in the back. And that's that two-year-old boy that was playing the pinball, that's him up on the roof there, so, of the car. Okay, again, real quick, this is just some more stuff that was video game, or this was a redemption game, believe it or not. Okay, go ahead. And this is my, I think I mentioned this earlier, this is the Roger Sharp game that he and I collaborated on, and this was the 25th anniversary of the Muppets. And it's one of the last things I did for commercial game. This was for a redemption game, if I remember right. Okay. All right, another little injection of wrestling. The guy in the lower left-hand corner, go ahead, and the next one, too. That's my grandson, winning the state championship 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago. The next one. Okay, and there's three in a row here. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, that was probably one of the best days of my life as a wrestling coach when my own grandson is a state champion. Go ahead. Now, this is just a poster I got done doing pinball and arcade game for Seattle, and we're almost done. And this is my studio. That's the back part of the studio. That is not Cecil the Lion up there, and I did not shoot that lion. I happened to like lions a long time ago when that was at a state auction. Okay, move. This is more of the studio, and I think that's going to be, should go ahead. Next one, you can see how I'm hanging, the paintings are hanging up there. Studio, okay, next one. That just gives you an idea of kind of what a messy art studio looks like. Next one. Okay, somebody asked me, what am I doing today? This was done a year ago, not quite a year ago. I did actually two like that, and these are huge murals that I did in a high school, and I've done three more since then. So there is a way for a painter, you know, to make it what was great about doing pinball was you were doing very large scale illustrations, but now I got a chance to even do the larger scale. So that's why I'm still doing artwork. Okay, I said I was going to talk about, that's the other one, that's the one in the gym. The wrestling thing. Okay, I've never told this story before. And it's going to be an embarrassment to me, but what the heck. Greg Ferris is still here, I think, is he? Okay, yep. And I think he was there, so he can verify it. And I think possibly Greg Kamek was there. Back in the day when the middle 80s, early 80s, pinballs were not doing so well, right? And Tom Neiman was in charge of creating the Bally Christmas party. And you know where I'm going? Everybody's complained, let's not have the regular, where everybody gets loaded and talks how bad things are. And, let's try to do something different. So Neiman, ever the optimist, and he decides to have, he booked the Sheraton Hotel over on Mannheim, and he booked the pool area. And not only it was going to be kind of a Christmas party in December with beachwear, but he also invited the Chicago Knockers. Does anybody know who the Chicago Knockers are? They are a female mud wrestling team. Here we go. So I know all week long that the secretaries, and correct me if I'm wrong, the secretaries were, matching up how they were going to wrestle each other in the mud ring and have a female brawl in there. And then Neiman pulled me aside and said, "Paul, I know you're a wrestler, So I don't know if anything's going to happen or not, but he said, but be ready if they want to bring you in the ring to be ready to go." Well, I'm a wrestler. I hear a whistle, I'm ready to wrestle, And so I put on a singlet, which is what the one-piece garment that's indestructible that you wear when you wrestle, and I was ready to go. And, these girls, these beautiful girls come out, and they knew how to wrestle a little bit. I mean, they were definitely serious about it, and they're doing their mud wrestling. And then I think we had in the early card, I think we had two secretaries wrestle each other, and that was kind of fun for see them do it. Well, then I got the cue that, "Yeah, Paul, we want you to go in there and wrestle." Now, I have been telling my kids, which is the truth, that during my college and high school career, I never was pinned. I didn't win every match, but I never got pinned, and that's somewhat of a badge of honor. Okay, so now I'm going in the ring with two girls. And again, they're serious, but they're beautiful. And so I have to be somewhat of a gentleman, the best I could. But then I think the manager, who was also gorgeous, looked me in the eyes, and she kind of looked me over, and she said, "No, don't hurt my girls." I'm thinking, "Well, hurt your girls. I'm just going to wrestle." And so I go out there, and, I grab one by the waist, and my objective was to get them down on the mat, on the mud, and pin them, and get their shoulders to the mat. So I get one down, and then I've got the other one in my other arm, and I'm putting her on the mat. So I think I've almost got them pinned. All of a sudden, there's a third girl on me. And then there's a fourth girl on me. Now, this is going to be, now it's going to be kind of survivalist. You know, I can't be, you know, I'm this wrestler, right? I can't be destroyed here. And as I'm wrestling with him, trying to be somewhat careful, I don't hurt anybody, and it's all, you know, nothing gets ruined or anything or hurt. I feel the side of my singlet, which has a strip of elastic on it, being torn. Now, I'm going to tell you something. When I buy those singlets for my teams, the guy will offer me $100 if I can tear those singlets, and I've never been able to tear one. Somehow, one of these girls is tearing my singlet, and it's getting down to where I have one small band of elastic around my leg that keeps me between, you know, my dignity, I guess is the way to say it. So I have to decide pretty quick what I'm going to do to finish this thing off. And so what I end up doing, for the first time, I admit it, I laid down on my back, and they pinned me, and that was the end of the story. So that was like, that was not a typical ballet party. Is that a fair representation? Anyway, thanks very much for letting me talk with you.
Thanks, Paul. Very nice.